Thank you so much, Sia. Thank you, everyone, for turning up for this lovely, special, deep, hopefully combative and enlightening conversation. We've all come from listening to the finance minister speaking about the budget for the year, looking at the next 3 years, and we're all asking ourselves, is this the high road, as Clem Sonta used to say, or is South Africa on the low road to hardship? And so these are conversations that people are having in their homes, they're having in the streets, and we're going to have a chance to unpack that. I'm going to do that with some amazing people here. Alan Beasley from Action SA, Anthony Dittrich from the South African Communist Party, recently untethered from the ANC. Makashule Ghana from Rise Mzansi, who I've known for a very long time. And every time I see him, he's going to run a comrades marathon or coming back from running a comrades marathon. It's so lovely to have you here. And Dr. Mark Berg, who is with the Democratic Alliance and has already made some comments about this budget. So I'm going to start with you and ask you, last year going into this budget, it was quite something. I was sitting there midday getting ready to listen to it, and the cabinet meeting was taking place. And 1 o'clock, suddenly we all hear that, oh, it's been canceled. Go home, all your lovely outfits Makashule was ready for, all of it, and no, go home, there's no budget speech. And then we went through the whole thing, the drama of no budget, and then no budget again, and then third time lucky, we had a budget. So I want you to tell me, why are we here? How come this time it worked? How come today we had one go at it, and he delivered the speech, and we can now comment on it?
Yeah, you go through these events in your life, and it's hard to like map out the seminal moments. But I remember sitting in the house. I'm a backbench MP, so I was sitting in the very backbench, and a federal leader is walking past me. And he's just whispering under his breath, "There's no budget. The budget is cancelled," and that's the first I heard of it.
It's quite historic. I mean, I've been reporting on these things for years and years. The idea that you cancel a State of the Nation speech, a budget speech, it's
unheard of.
For the markets, for all of us in the room, it's quite unheard of.
Yeah, and I think that moment is sort of, to answer your question then, you know, why did it not work then and why is it working now? I think that moment was the moment where, what if Africans already knew that the ANC had 39% of the seats in parliament? That was the moment when the ANC started realizing it, that they couldn't just ram through something without coalition parties supporting it. Of course, they had had some late nights with folks to try and make a plan to go a different direction. But I think even that, it's dawned on them that in any coalition, not just the national coalition that we find ourselves in, that the bigger the collection of parties involved and the thinner the margin for a majority, the higher the risk you have that what you're trying to do doesn't end up happening. And so I think that was it was obviously confrontational and there was drama, but it was a moment that the power imbalance was slightly corrected. And I think that power imbalance being corrected is why this year there's been more consultation in the process. It's why this year the DA feels like it's been able to provide input and steer both our fiscal situation but also our posture towards industry and enterprise in a direction that we believe will get the economy going. Still not nearly as fast enough, as fast as we need it to be. But when we listen today to things, and I'm sure we'll touch on it this evening, but when we listen to things like bracket creep finally being resolved for the first time in 3 years, when we've heard the VAT threshold for registration for the first time in almost 20 years, going up from what it has been at 1 million to 2.3 million, part of a package of thresholds and limits of no less than 22 that have been increased, it starts feeling like we're sending a signal that we actually want people and businesses to succeed here. And that is a DA policy position. So I think what's happened here is, at least from our perspective, we feel more consulted in this cycle. And I think that's my answer to why it's worked this time and not last time.
Alan, how do you react to that? This is essentially a GNU budget. This is largely an DA budget, and therefore for many people it would be, wow, this is fantastic. The GNU is gelling, yeah. It's getting together. Yeah. And that's why you have business saying yeah. It's all good. Yeah. You have all kinds of people saying yeah. It's great.
Yeah, so I think in terms of the DA budget, we're not in the GNU. We are outside of it, but we can see some things from Action SA that's been very effective and we're not part of. And it just shows what an effective, pragmatic, rational opposition can be, because we don't go out there and insult, confront people. You know, we've done a lot of work behind the scenes. What happened last year? SARS got an extra $20 billion to close the $800 billion tax gap. What's happened? No tax increases this year. I've been talking about the illicit trade for some time now. It's on the national agenda. It was in the Sona speech. What happened for the first time in 15 years, alcohol didn't increase more than inflation. So it's on the national agenda now. It's a big thing. I mean, the illicit trade is a cancer that is killing our people and killing our economy and jobs. So we're not part of the GNU, but we were able to influence the budget from a very positive thing. And I've always said I've got huge respect for Mark. So it's not a personal criticism of him. But if people are celebrating a 1% economic growth, I mean, that is pathetic. We have got 12 million people unemployed. You know, one of my heroes in life is Martin Luther King Jr., who talks about unemployment as psychological murder because it deprives a person of their hope, their agency, their dreams. I'm a father of four. Imagine the pain of not being able to feed your family. And I actually get angry about it when the GNU celebrate a 1% economic growth. And it, to me, the best word for it is it's pathetic. You know, we're not going to change the economy on a 1% economic growth. So I do think that it's a big issue. And it's a big factor that nobody's talking about in the budget is that a 1% economic growth is disastrous. Rest of sub-Saharan Africa is 3%. We can't blame external factors. We can only blame ourselves. And we can blame a lot of ANC policies that are continuing under the GNU.
Well, I mean, the State of the Nation speech, President Ramaphosa starts off saying, we're turning the corner. Today, again, the Minister of Finance says, we're turning the corner. Yeah. I know you're not in Parliament yet as the South African Communist Party, but you're contesting elections this year at the end of the year, local elections. I want you to give me your take when you hear this positive narrative, the narrative that Alan speaks about. And yet, 32% unemployment, youth unemployment in the 60s. And here we're saying, oh, you know, it's all fantastic, it's all great. I want to buy the positive sentiment. I want to say, yes, we're turning the corner. But 1%, I think Alan makes a good point. Well, and can I just say, it's your comrades in the ANC, because you were in alliance with the ANC for a very long time.
I will get to that point. But at the moment, let me just speak to you, the projection that has been given to the public that we are turning the corner. Mm. You can't put lipstick on a pig or put a silk dress onto a pig. It still remains a pig. And the pig in this discussion is about fiscal austerity, industrial austerity, and monetary austerity. These three fundamental policies that is anchoring the economy at this point in time, it's causing a great deal of harm to the working class. These policies are directed to suck out and squeeze out the livelihood out of the working class, out of working people. Unless we overcome this notion about ensuring that this capitalist structure that has been created within this particular context of our economy, and being in government for the last 30 years and not seeing a change and a difference within the employment and the inequality and the poverty, creates the tensions on the ground that we're currently experiencing as a Communist Party when we are meeting with communities. It was just last week that I went to a hospital because I decided I'm not going to go to a private hospital, going to a public hospital to go and get treatment. When I walked in there, there was a woman sitting on a wheelchair giving birth in front of everyone. The baby just dropped out of her uterus. That in itself shocked me. I went to go and get the x-rays that was required for me to be processed in the medical system. And I went to the desk for me to be now examined. And the woman that was sitting in front of the desk was extremely angry. And she shouted at me and said, well, I said, there's nobody here. I'm the only patient here. Can you please just tell me, when can you help me? And I could understand her frustration because she told me, I've been here for 12 hours. Just give me time to rest. I said, I understand that and I can see your frustration. The fact, however, is that our public services, the policies that the government is currently pursuing and within the GNU is creating the kind of social conditions that is unbearable. And the only way that we can overcome this is to say that we must eradicate those policies, get back to people-centered policies that ultimately can overcome the deepening inequality, the poverty, and the unemployment.
Is it policy or is it... Let's take a hospital in the news, Tembisa Hospital. I cannot really honestly say it's ANC policy or it's Government of National Unity policy or the ANC before that that is responsible. It's pure corruption and the failure of the state to deal with these issues. Exactly the scenario you paint, I'm sure all of us in here are in pain about it. But I would venture, I would say to you, Makashile, you used to be in the Gauteng legislature. These are issues that have come before the Gauteng legislature again and again, and nothing happened. The government, the party in power for a long time in Gauteng did nothing about it. And so I would say to you, I'm not sure that this is policy. I think it's perhaps policy to just allow corruption to fester.
No? Yeah, but at the center of the policies implementation is the tendering system upon which we are ultimately ensuring that services are rendered. So everything is tendered out. So that in itself creates the potential and the possibilities of corruption to happen. There is a person that is coming in to provide the service, and there's a person that is providing the resources for that service to be implemented. And in between that, that is where the corruption is ultimately happening. The foundation of the tender system in our society, in the way that the state is currently running the services, is at the root of corruption.
Makashile, I'd like to get your response.
Anyone on, yeah. Because even in the DA city here in the Western Cape, you can't get a tender unless you put 10% down.
I'm going to ask Makashile Ghana to give us his thoughts. And I want him to give us his thoughts because, Makashile, you are in the Government of National Unity. The government he's talking about, where you have to put down something to get a bit of the work, government contract, is the government that you're part of now. So as you give me your view of the budget, I think that's something you might have to contend with ethically, morally, thinking about that woman giving birth in reception at the public hospital.
Thanks, Justice. So one of the things, and we're talking about it now, sometimes it's not the policy, it's the attitude and behavior of the public servants. And if we don't, you know, like in South Africa, we just have this. So everything that goes wrong is a politician. That the public servant cannot be blamed. Even at the time, in fact, I would say 7, 8 out of 10. When the bureaucracy or the public servant, the civil servants, do their shenanigans, the politicians will not know. Take for instance, We've got people at Home Affairs who are selling visas. That's not a policy issue. Someone decides out of greed that, no, here's an opportunity for me to steal from the people of South Africa, to sell the country out. What I then say, Justice, where I say maybe we are slow is when we kind of accept that there will be those that will try to steal from the public. The state must be quick enough to make them pay for their deeds. In the same way that, for instance, I serve in the Police Portfolio Committee, and I'm happy that there's a billion rand that goes to SARBs to strengthen organized crime so that we can be able to deal with some of these issues. I say you will have certain types of crimes that it's not due to lack of policing. It's attitude and behavior. Like, you can't, if you take rape that happens in a family, you can't say that the police could stop that. You know, it's the attitude. But when it happens, what is our expectation? Our expectation is that the police must investigate, make sure that the perpetrator goes to jail. In the same way that when you have instances of stealing from the public by public servants, by politicians, the expectations is that the state must be able to arrest those people, take them through the court processes so that they pay for what they've done. What makes people frustrated is that these actions take for a long time, that by the time that the actions are taken, the money is finished. You know, like someone has said that for the last 10 years, they've stolen 16 million. I don't know how much of that 16 million they still have in their bank account that they can pay back to the state. But coming back to the budget. So
Let's forget the budget and really I'm feeling
better. All right, let's forget the budget. Let's talk about the state of South Africa.
I feel really that you're excusing a lot. You're letting go of your agency as a politician. I'd say to you, all of us, when Lindiwe Sisulu was Minister of Home Affairs, we knew. You come from Alexandra Township. I come from Pretoria. We knew in Marabastad, at the Home Affairs office, that's where you go to buy whatever piece of paper you want, permanent residency ticket, whatever. Mm. We knew 10 years ago. When you became an MP, you were standing up for these things in the Gauteng legislature.
Yeah.
I cannot today and say, stand up and say, no, we didn't know.
No. That's not what I'm saying, Justice. I'm saying it is the time that it takes to make those that are perpetrating these acts of corruption, stealing from the public, to face the music. So it takes a long time. So we know. So if you say we know in Marabastad, so they are Home Affairs officials there.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that this thing is happening, but no one is actually going in there to actually arrest those perpetrators.
Yeah, I'd say to you, look at Leon Schreiber, the Home Affairs Minister. He's been in office for 18 months, and actually something is happening. People are being arrested. I don't know how, without being a DA supporter, I want to say, my guy, you're doing something that your predecessor and your predecessor and the predecessor after that didn't do. No, I think leadership is an important part.
Yeah, leadership is very important. It's very important. But, you know, like sometimes, and especially when you look at, say, for instance, at the recent cases that I referenced of Home Affairs, this is not a new proclamation by the president. This proclamation was there in 2021, 2022. So sometimes, but you see, when you accept responsibility of government, you accept it with its problem and with successes. But sometimes what happens in politics is that when something is wrong, you point to your predecessor. But when something that was started by your predecessor, that then come to fruition. So I planted the tree, but then by the time that the tree bears fruits, you just happen to own the house. Then you say, no,
I have planted a good tree, but it takes a long time for an avocado tree to bear the avocado. But then we have a tendency, unfortunately, that sometimes someone who did not even plant the tree, when the fruits are there, then they take a full claim of even planting that tree. And everyone claps their hands and say, you are working when you did not even plant the tree, nor even water it, for that matter.
Go ahead.
Oh, where do I start? I'm not sure that an avocado is a fruit. But
I can tell you've never been to Limpopo. Maybe you need to go to Limpopo. You don't know fruits, my friend.
It might very well be a fruit. That's the smallest issue I take with all that's been said. I'm tempted almost to say that I'll engage with the SACP once they get a seat in Parliament, but in the interest of intellectual rigor, I'm happy to engage with what the gentleman has now shared. There seems to be this disconnect between, one, the fact that the SACP has propped up the ANC for 31 years, and two, the fact that, as you say, it might not be a failure of policy, but the one policy we can certainly point to now is that there will be people who will be protected. They will do wrong, and we will still protect them. And somebody has to own up to that. And I can't think of any better to do that than the SACP as part of this tripartite alliance. And then if the answer is, oh, but really our problem is tendering. You know, we sit with a tendering system. How does that explain ghost workers within the public sector, people who are on the payroll who don't exist? Was that a tender's fault that resulted in those people being there? And we're not even scratching the surface because these ghost worker audits focus on national government and provincial government within what Treasury calls the personal system, personally salary system. It doesn't touch on SOEs, which I think there's probably a lot of ghost workers hiding there. It doesn't touch on local government. These are things that communists believe in. But they tell us, no, the problem is tendering. And then just to touch on what my colleague Mr. Beasley has said, many factual inaccuracies. The fact is Treasury is telling us that there was 1.4% economic growth last year. They're projecting 1.6% economic growth here this year. And none of us in the DA have celebrated that. That 1.6% barely keeps up with population growth. So to allege that we are sitting around saying, well done, is simply inaccurate. It, of course, needs to be a 3% or more. And it could be if we started undermining some of these things like Transnet having a behemoth monopoly unique to anywhere else in the world. So we've got a policy problem, and that policy problem, I'm afraid to say, is the policy of protecting certain individuals. And it's the inability to try and escape from this 1960s dogma that has held South Africa back for how long now?
But you're blaming the SACP for the ANC's dogma. They were a junior partner.
Might very well be, but they've veered them to the wrong side. It's as if there's a highway, and you get to drive on the highway, and you see that you're going off the left, and there's a cliff. And these guys say, guys, swing that wheel. We need to properly go off this road. So there's a clear solution here, which is market-friendly, business-friendly, rational policy that fits into a 2026 world. And you won't get it from the guys in red.
Alan Beasley, you want to respond?
I'm giggling. I just have a huge regard for Mark. So it's not, I don't know if he was at the Sona reply when John Steenhuisen was celebrating the one. He said we've had four positive economic growth the last quarters, 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, 0.4. It's disastrous. So to say that they're not celebrating, they're part of the GNU. When the medium-term budget was presented and 1.2%, they stood up and they clapped. I was there. You know, so to say I'm fabricating stuff is maybe that's why he's the ex-leader, because maybe he doesn't talk on behalf of the party anymore.
Another factual inaccuracy. No, he's still our leader.
Yeah, but he's going to soon. I mean, I don't know if you saw the wobble he threw yesterday. I mean, it was quite embarrassing, but he's clearly the ex-leader. But I think the whole point about corruption, where everybody's missing, is I sit on Scopa and I see the corruption that's going on in the entities there. And I asked the Auditor General, what's the one thing? She sees every single thing. She says for corrupt people to put in orange overalls and corrupt politicians. And the reality, if every corrupt politician, MPs, was put with the cloud hanging over there, was put into orange overalls, we wouldn't have a quorum, because more than 200 would be put in orange overalls. But the funniest thing about the DA, they won't bring a motion against our president, who's got dollars hundreds and thousands of dollars in his mattress because they're protecting him. So they can't come out and attack the SACP because they're part of the problem. And that's why we couldn't join the GNU, because we can't be part of a criminal society. And I don't, and until there's accountability for the senior politicians, until the senior politicians are put in orange overalls, you can't expect them to interject.
So, I agree on the overalls. but they shouldn't be orange. No. They should be lime green. They ought to be differentiated from the other kind of crime. So
that's a good point.
We are able to say these ones have stolen from the people.
Yeah, good point.
And we should be able to parade them every weekend by cleaning the streets, so that we can show our kids to say, when you steal from the people, you wear lime green uniform and you clean the streets every weekend. Because you are correct. You are correct that sometimes, that's why I'm talking about the time that it takes. That people even lose trust in the ability of the criminal justice system to put those that are stealing from the public in jail. And if there's one thing that I even said, that you might remember during the correctional service budget vote, to say, no, those that have stolen from the public should not be given orange overalls. It should be lime green. So that whenever you go to prison to visit your friend, you see a lime green, you can be able to identify, all right, that one did not steal from a supermarket. That one stole from the people of South Africa. Because at the moment, you can't differentiate when you go to a correctional facility who's the murderer who stole from the people of South Africa.
I must just pick up my colleague here and say that even though his party's colors is lime green, I don't think they're actual criminals in the leadership of Action SA.
So I want you to include in your response, I mean, you know, people like me in the media and so forth, we say a lot of stuff about the ANC. But I listened to the minister this afternoon, and I have to say, education, the social spend that this government actually, you know, I've been spending a lot of time in Hammanskraal, where my mother lives, and I can tell you, the people who use public services, something as simple as, you know, people get their kids' transport who live far from the school that I went to. But now, because of squatter settlements and so forth, there are people, there are kids who have to walk huge distances. And actually, this government pays scholar transport, dangerous, overloaded, all that, but still pays for those kids to be picked up at their gate to the school. And I have to say, I look at that and I say, I walked that distance and it was terrible. And this government is doing something about it. It's something that I don't think about, because my kids are in a nice car going to school. But it's real spend like that that makes me stop and say, oh, you know, I'm complaining about the SRD and 350 rand, but actually the envelope is quite meaningful.
Well, you are right. I mean, and I will not dispute the fact that the ultimate social net and ensuring that people don't fall even deeper into poverty, the state provides that. But it's not sustainable to the point that whilst we are carrying it out, and we should continue to do so, the essence, however, is to ensure that those people get employed. And what is the cause of the unemployment problem that we are experiencing in South Africa? And it's been going on for decades now. So it can't be just corruption that is causing the effect people are not employed. It's a systemic system that creates the potential of people not being absorbed into the employment sector. Our economy is expanding, and is expanding on a services level. Precarious work is deepening in our society. Poverty employment is increasing. The level of people that are on the social system in the employment conditions are very minor and very small in comparison to the vast majority of workers that falls outside of that. That is a systemic problem. It's a problem that results into us not able to lift ourselves out of the doldrum that we have been inherited as an apartheid economy. We haven't broken away from that. We haven't re-engineered. We are not working towards ensuring that employment is generated out of our minerals, out of what we can build within our society. We are not focusing on that. We are not focusing on providing the kind of resources required to expand the productive economy in our South African context. All that is happening, that our workers are ultimately being casualized, being thrown out the periphery of the employment, and we are not able to turn those employment into dignified, sustainable, and an employment that is capable of ensuring that there is a foundational base for people to lift their families out of poverty. We are sitting with a systemic problem in our country.
You're agreeing?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I agree. So one of the things that generally happens, there's this concept, I think they call it declinism bias, always thinking that things are going down. Mm-hmm. There's this thinking among South Africans. So when the Minister of Finance delivers a speech, you are conditioned to think, what has gone wrong? That you don't for a moment to say, all right, what is really working? So social grants, Justice, are paid to over 11 million South Africans on time, every month, on time, every month, for 24 months, uninterrupted. No one sees that. Ne? But when one day there's a glitch, for one day, and then the following day they are paid, then everyone say, no, the world is coming to an end. So we don't take time to say, yes, we do have problems. There are a lot of problems in South Africa. But there are things that are working. There are things that are working. And you know what? You and I are from Joburg. I mean, just outside this hotel. The people that are out there are tourists. You know what? They are leaving their countries to come here. They say, you know what? We are going to have the best time of our lives. But we as South Africans, every day, it's like we are conditioned to say, no, we must be unhappy about South Africa on a daily basis. Go to the airport, you see how many people from Europe, from Asia, from America who come to South Africa. Actually, our tourism numbers have recovered. Does it mean that we don't have problems? We do have problems. But is everything going down? Are we facing Armageddon? No! No! And if we ourselves...
But then you're shutting down Alan Bisi, no. who wants to say, let's make it better.
No! We have to make it better, but we must not talk from this position that says, no, you know what? There's the cliff, you're about to die. No! No! You see, we are here now. You flew here. Let me tell you, I'm in the Transport Portfolio Committee. You know that in South Africa, mm-hmm. in the last 8 years or so, there hasn't been a commercial airline accident in South Africa. Over 8 years, there hasn't been a commercial. The ones that do have accidents are those ones that are mechanics in the backyard and so forth. But the commercial airlines, they were. When you watch the news and there's the time for the weather, you believe what is said there. When you deposit money in your account, you don't have fear that tomorrow when you want that money, you won't get it. But what are we conditioned to think? So there's this ongoing effort to make South Africans hate South Africa. And at some point, we have to stand up to say, no, it can't be. If people are moving from Europe, they are coming here to come and have a good time. Why can't we as South Africans have a good time in South Africa? What is it that stops us from having a good time in South Africa? When we are being made to hate South Africa, why? Who benefits from that agenda?
I'm going to ask Alan Beasley.
I would ask the 12 million people who are unemployed, who can't deal with their families, are they having a good time? They deserve better from our country, not tourists coming in. So I'm speaking on behalf of the 12 million people, and it's terrible for them.
And you can't pass... go to the airport and not seeing the squatter camps sprawling across the entire landscape of the Western Cape. and many other places.
But that,
this hold. We measure the development of any nation, any state, on the basis of the conditions of the working class, the poorest of the poor, whether they are being catered for, right?
You've got a cell phone. No. The network. If it has a network, something is working.
Don't be silly. People don't eat networks. People don't feed their children with networks.
But I'm saying
No. Tourists are running in our streets. Potholes are all over the place. Houses have been burned down during summer. Houses are flooded during winter in the Western Cape.
Yes.
Those conditions are not changing. And you're asking people to be happy, to be appreciative of what we have achieved. All that people are wanting is that they want their children, at least their children, to have a better life.
We all do.
At this point in time, they are in distress.
But is and the situation we, now better sitting. Than it was 30
no, no,
years ago?
No, we're talking about this situation. We're talking about today.
The United Nations said apartheid was a crime against humanity. You can't compare a crime against humanity to now. Of course, things have become better, but we need to interrogate the fact that let me move the conversation back to the budget. Dr. Berg, I want to ask you, there was a silence. You know, in the Eastern Cape, your party leader said something this afternoon that he's from the Eastern Cape, and he was saying, you know, what does this budget do for the people of the Eastern Cape? And it got me thinking about the Goodyear factory. Is it Bridgestone? If you think about the deindustrialization that's taking place in the Eastern Cape, was there in the budget anything that spoke to you about the fact that we're shutting down? I come from Pretoria, and in Roslyn, Nissan is selling its factory to a Chinese motor manufacturer,
Chery.
And I'm sitting there thinking, we used to make things. I come from Hammanskraal, where there was an industrial Babeleri, which, to be fair, paid people horribly under Mangope. But things used to be made. When I went to school, I wore butter shoes. Butter shoes were made in Babeleri. Over time, it seems to me that in South Africa, in the same place, I'll make one last example about where I come from. In the same place in Babeleri, it's just shopping mall after shopping mall, and we are not making things anymore. So I sat there and said, I didn't hear the minister speak about this. I was saying to Sia earlier, I actually went back and read the speech just to say, remind me again about South Africa building things. And I didn't see it. I'd like to have a discussion about that. What are we doing to stop Bridgestone, Goodyear, all those companies shutting down and actually igniting some industry?
It's not enough. We try and bring the temperature in the room a bit down. I'll try and speak as clinically as I can about the problem that you've now described without making it too political, because it's an existential issue that you're describing. And I think it's two-pronged. The one has got to do with industrial policy, and the other has got to do with trade relations. And of course, they interrelate to some extent. But our industrial policy, and I don't want to, as the young people say, trigger my colleague from the Communist Party, but the industrial policy is massively dated. It still relies on a dogmatic view of the world that says you pick industry winners and losers, and then you try as best you can to give advantage to your chosen winners. And that simply doesn't fit into a 2026 world anymore. So that's the policy shift that is needed. But then there's also a trade relation component to it. I'm going to get to the Goodyear and Bridgestone, but also the original equipment manufacturers in the Eastern Cape. And the reality is, and again, I'm not trying to be political here, I'm just trying to assess it as clinically as I can. in a 2026 world where a lot of trade is going in the direction of bilateral trade, I'm not now trying to speak about Trump or America, I'm just saying that the world is heading in a direction that looks less multilateral and looks more bilateral. We have done almost nothing to position ourselves well in a bilateral world. And when we have done things, it's almost been at the expense of our biggest trading partners. Now, you could say for historic reasons, you prefer different trading partners, but there is such a thing as purchasing power. And our two biggest export markets have disproportionate purchasing power to other markets. And we have simply not invested in the resources needed. And when I say resources needed, I mean ambassadors and trade representatives that are measured on one metric, and that is how much have you increased exports to your host country in the last year? That simple metric. And instead, what we've gone and done is we've taken what we think are principal positions on the world stage at high expense to our industry. And so the combination of these two things, in my estimation, a dated industrial policy and an absolute neglect of trade, has resulted in industries and livelihoods falling apart. Now, there are some studies indicating that there are as many as 12 people dependent on each job in the Eastern Cape. And so if you allow these industries to die, you're not just letting go of those workers, you're letting go of all the people that are dependent on them. And so I take your point that not just in the Eastern Cape, but in the largest, it feels like our industries are rapidly dying right in front of us. I'd like to think we can move to a place where we position ourselves well in a world where even if we have a lot of malls, we start thinking of what skills will be needed in the world in the next 10 years and how can we equip people to deliver those services, which is what I think we might become, to the world while taking advantage of our position on the continent in terms of manufacturing and exporting and while taking advantage of our vast natural resources, including our minerals, including the second highest solar radiation in the world, and many other resources at our disposal.
Let me give Alan a chance to respond to this.
So I think you raised a brilliant point. I must say, in my budget responses, I actually didn't highlight that because it's a key thing. Manufacturing's gone from 20% in GDP to 12% now. So we're de-industrializing, and we're actually becoming dumber as a country. And once you lose a manufacturing job, it's very difficult to get it back because you lose the technology, you lose the innovation. So it's difficult. You know, I come from a manufacturing environment. Once you shut a factory down, mothball it, there's no chance. You've lost it. Your other countries are going advancing on that and you falling behind. But we can over-academicize it, over-philosophize it, whatever the right word is, but it comes down to actual basics. You've got to be able to move goods, you've got to have cheap electricity, and you've got to cut down the red tape. It's like our government is against business, and it should actually be all business, and the governments might actually get out of the way and allow business to be business, allow SMEs to flourish. There's just so much red tape in our thing. And just and I look at the Minister of Trade and Industry. Has he ever run a business in his life? And the answer is no. And it comes back to the Minister of Agriculture. Has he ever looked after a farm before? The answer is no. So we need to have people whose skills in that particular set that actually understand manufacturing. You can't have a politician telling people manufacturers how to operate and whatever. You just got to get the simple things right. We need the skills. I've often said, you know, I'm new to Parliament. I sit around there and I think if these are the people running our country, we're in big trouble. And that's probably where we are at the moment because there's a lack of skills. There's a lack of good people, qualified people coming through to Parliament that can actually lead these departments. So you need a person who understands manufacturing to lead Department of Trade and Industry. You need a person who understands farming to lead. I mean, look at our defense. You know, we need somebody to lead those, and we just don't have that. And everything rises and falls on leadership.
We need new leaders.
New leaders, yeah.
I thought Razum Zansi came through fresh and new in 2024 to be the new leaders. So now help me here. Why isn't it in the government of national unity? And yourself, Songezo Zibi, have made these points in the past about friendliness towards business, about supporting businesses that are in trouble, finding innovative tariff subsidy structures for the steel industry in South Africa. But right now, if you think about Boksburg, jobs are going to just die, because in this budget, I did not see the minister say anything about supporting any of those industries and how they pay for electricity and so forth. So, I mean, should I just go home and try now? Or do you have a plan? Because you're members of the GNU. I mean, the two of you.
Yeah. By the way, we are not in the Xenity.
Oh, you're washing your hands.
No, I'm not. We hate SCOPA. We hold all the departments accountable in terms of how they spend their money. But one of the things and how you support business sometimes is not direct. So if we get Transnet working. You know what happened with Transnet, that people at some point they stole the railway. The line. That's what got stolen. They stole the whole thing. So where there used to be a railway track, it's no longer there. They stole the cable and so on. So if you get Transnet to operate optimally, you get Praza, which 5.8 billion is given to Praza, which reduces the cost of travel to and from work for the workers, the working class. You get that where you get Sandra at work, and now with the electricity that is stabilized, you know, like stabilizing electricity, obviously we can deal with the cost. Because one of the things that made us competitive, no one can disagree, is that our electricity price was relatively cheap compared to other countries, but now there's been, now it's no longer as cheap as it was, but now it's stable. When you add this and you couple it with a much strengthened, organized crime unit of SAPS to deal with the illicit trade market, and together with the border management, now you have almost like the conditions that are necessary. Then ensure that people start businesses here, and because now they can move goods, people can move a lot affordably to from work. So now what I see this period, Justice, for me, is preparation. It's a preparation for the leap. You can't expect that there will be a leap from a 1.2 or 0.9% 2 years ago. You can leap from 0.9 to 8% growth. The leap is not that easy. So you need to prepare so that you get to a space where you can leap forward. From at the end of this medium term, they should not be talking about the 1.4, 1.62%. Mm. We should be leaping towards the 5%, 6%. Mm. If that is the commitment, that all right, this is the period wherein we are making sure that all the network industries are operating, and then at the end of this medium term. So no, because every time the minister delivers a speech, he says in the medium term. Every year there's a 3-year period, but we say this 3-year period ends in 27, 28, then 28, 29. We must start seeing the leap forward.
Both of you have spoken about illicit trade, and you said at the beginning that you're very, very interested in this. And I'm quite interested. The minister addressed, sorry, my notes are all over the place, but the minister dedicated quite a bit of a few paragraphs to illicit trade. But I didn't feel like there was actually anything new he said. So I want to ask you, is there anything that exists, that are there any tools that exist legislatively or within enforcement agencies, perhaps, to address the root causes of illicit trade?
So I think that the thing for us from an Action SA's perspective, we've been arguing against inflationary increase in excise taxes, because all that you're doing is you're making legal products more expensive.
So which he did today.
No, it was in line with inflation. It's the first time in 15 years that alcohol hasn't been increased by more than inflation. First time in 15 years. It's huge, because last year it was 6.5%. And the industry was expecting the same too. So they delighted. It's first time in 15 years that's happened. So it's a massive statement that. Mm-hmm. And secondly, last time the medium-term budget was the first time the list.
Let me interrupt you quickly. Sure. But at the same time, you have a major tobacco manufacturer saying, I'm shutting down one factory. Yeah. I think it's in the Eastern Cape as well. And at the same time, there's an increase on
tobacco products. It's an inflationary increase, but you can't. You also got to have the enforcement. You can't have. So they've had shocking tax policies in the past that's allowed it, but there's been no enforcement. So you've got to have the enforcement. So this year, Action SA, interview me this time next year, and we're going to make sure that there's money allocated to SARS, to the Border Management Association, and to SAPC to tackle illicit trade. And the thing with illicit trade, it's become quite a personal issue for me because it's a cancer that is killing our people. It's a justice issue the rich people can afford legal products, but the poor people have to go to illicit products because of the excise tax on it. And they're actually drinking and smoking poison, and it's wrong. It's damaging health, and there's huge criminality behind the illicit trade. So it's a cancer that must be killed. It must be killed out, but it's on the national agenda. And you speak to me this time next year, and we're looking at positive developments to the enforcement side.
I know you want to make a point, but I want you to make a point from a question that comes from the audience. So if there are any questions, please just raise your hand, and Sia will come to you. But make your point anyway, because no one yet wants to ask you a question.
Well, I think it's important to have opposition to whatever government's doing in Parliament. So I don't want to discourage active opposition. It strikes me as comical sometimes when parties, it's almost like a little ant that like is shouting at the elephant to move, and when it moves it says, oh, look, I made a move. Telling us that by next year, like Action SA is going to make sure that SARS is allocated. SARS listens to the commissioner, and the commissioner engages with Treasury. There has, in fact, now been money allocated to combating the illicit trade because it's been insisted on within government. It might be that good questions are coming out of Parliament, but to claim credit for that while staying outside of government is just a bit...
Credit for it. There's no doubt about it. I'm claiming credit. Credit for it, and you ask the people behind it. I'm claiming credit. Action SA is claiming credit, and there's no doubt about it.
Okay. They also claim credit for avoiding a VAT increase, so...
The ANC claims credit for avoiding the VAT.
Yeah, that they propose. Let's take some questions from the audience.
Makashule Ghana, I have to say, mention of SARS for me reminds me that for quite a long while in the 2000s and even the beginning of the 2010s, SARS was an incredible, much respected institution. And then it was hollowed out, and there were big, big, big problems, and we had the Mpati Commission. But it seems to me that SARS is an institution that's really, you know, you mention it in terms of illicit trade, you mention it now again as in we listened, we gave them 750 billion?
7.5
billion.
7.5. Would have been a lot.
Look, I got money. And it seems to me that's something to celebrate, that here's an institution that, you know, many of us celebrate, and I think perhaps she didn't get such a good deal, the NPA and so forth. But some of these institutions have come back and are looking fantastic.
Indeed. It's one of the things that when you look at South Africa, yes, we accept the issues of poverty and employment, but we should be able to recognize where things are going well. You know, like SARS, big thing. The next big foray where SARS is going to, it's actually in the gambling space.
That's something you...
You know, I wanted the minister...
to come up.
I wanted the minister to mention gambling in his speech. Mm. He did not mention in his speech, but you know what? It's there in the budget review. It's firmly, Treasury is saying that by the end of this year, there will be firm proposals. So we're spending this year, we are consulting, but that there will be a national online gambling tax. It's no longer a question. Mm. We are only going to debate, does it stay 20%? Do we reduce it to around 12-13%? But that is coming. It's a big thing. But Westerns will assist us, because when you talk of illicit trade, Alan, it's not only the cigarette, the alcohol, the clothing, and so forth. It's also we have unlicensed and unregistered gambling operators that operate in South Africa.
and they're not paying any cent. So South Africans are pumping. So when you see the 75 billion, that is the gross gambling revenue, that does not include all these gambling companies that are registered in Curacao, in Malta, in all these countries that are actually operating in South Africa. So when we talk of illicit trade, we must also deal with it, because we need to apply the law. When we say the law must apply, if you go and play with one of these ones, and they use South African names and .co.za, some of them called Springbok casinos, so that you think that maybe someone either, and so on. We need to, the law says if you win there, the money when it comes in, we can stop it from, we can confiscate it before it gets to your account. So if you go and play with illegal unregistered operators, as part of dealing with illicit trade, we confiscate those winnings. They never get to your account. But SARS will become key, especially when dealing with illicit trade. But the big thing for me, it's when they start collecting the tax from the gambling operators. That will be a big win. Because once we start getting that tax right, there will never be a need for VAT increase, ever. Because now you'll have closed that gap for generations. So that's why the fight that I've been on is a generational fight. It's not for me. It's for my kids not to ever again face the possibility of the VAT being increased or the personal income tax not being adjusted for inflation. That's why I've been fighting this fight, to ensure that the gambling companies pay for the harm they cause to society.
I'm going to ask the other three panelists to conclude. I think you've made your very strong point, and I enjoy the point you made, because I find it distressing the number of poor working class people who are now saying in the streets, Ntakele voucher, please buy me a voucher. And these vouchers are, you think I'm buying you, they're buying these things to gamble. And it's the poorest of the poor that are being lured into this. But Alan, thank you for all your contributions. Please give me your concluding remarks, and then Anthony will follow, and then I'll talk.
I think in terms of the budget, I think there's some very, very good positives today. And I think, as Ghana said, sometimes we can be overcritical. And as a rational, constructive opposition party, when things are good, that we need to highlight. So there were some positives, but the elephant in the room, I don't know if the right is the economic growth. Until we can get economic growth going in our country, we're not going to change the life of South Africans. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, it's totally unacceptable. And from that point of view, I don't think there's much to celebrate about. And we can't wait another 3 years, and then another 3 years, and another 3 years. Economic growth must happen, and it must happen ASAP. And if those running the country can't get economic growth, they must get out of the way and maybe let the little ant who's able to make a difference actually make a difference, because they certainly aren't at the moment. So.
Anthony?
The budget is a continuation of the framework and structure in which ultimately a budget has been generated. It is dealing with the causes of our problems that we are currently sitting as a country. And maybe you might be arguing that the policy is not the issue, it is corruption and those kind of things. The foundational basis of our inability to expand the economy is rooted within fiscal austerity, monetary austerity, and industrial austerity. Industrial austerity has been referred to as the question of so many shopping malls opening, that is expansion of the service industry and the narrowing of the productive base of our economy that has not been expanding. We export raw materials, and what we get in return is finishing goods, and we're buying it back into the country. And that is what is currently happening. So unless we change direction in relation to our outlook, in relation to our economy, we will have a perpetual unemployment and inequality in our economy. If we don't break that, we are not going to overcome the problems that we are sitting
with. Can I ask you quickly, do you think the ANC is capable now of changing, given the pacts and coalitions that it has made, and it seems to me wants to see continue?
Well, that's precisely the reason why we're standing on the ballot.
Thank you. Makashilegana, you don't get a chance. So you get a chance.
We have to make South Africa. It's too beautiful and great land in both. We have to make it succeed by all means necessary. And we do need new leaders. We need new leaders. I saw others say, register to vote. Yes, registering to vote is a necessary condition, but it's not sufficient to bring the change that we need to see. To be able to bring the change, you register to vote and you need to get the best people to get into government. In that way, you have a necessary and a sufficient condition to make change happen in South Africa.
Mm. You get the last word.
Lovely. Well, look, I think to the Ghana's point, I think everybody on this panel, I would ascribe good intentions to, and actually want to see the best thing happening for South Africa. I don't want to spend too much time in rebuttal to what has been said, but I do think when we engage on these issues, we just need to almost use the same language with a bit of rigor. So when I hear things like fiscal austerity, but I know that the technical definition of fiscal austerity is if the budget this year is numerically smaller than the budget last year. That is the technical definition of fiscal austerity. I struggle to understand what's being said. So I'm not doubting the intentions of what's being said. I believe the gentleman wants the best for the country. But I struggle to understand, what are we complaining about? I think he's probably onto something that, like, we've got some industrial issue that you've alluded to as well. But when we use these confusing terms for people, I think we lose them and we lose each other in the process. And so I would just encourage, whether it's the SACP speaking or the MK party speaking or maybe even sometimes other parties, that we just try and develop the same language in the best way we can. Likewise, when we talk about economic growth versus a change of trajectory, we run the risk of confusing people. It is appropriate to say that at this point, we might have started veering the ship in the right direction. Some of the indicators that you're doing better things than you used to do are there. We are off the grey list. The Rand is doing well. We are exceeding our revenue collection, which is a good thing. And the economic growth, although sluggish and not nearly where we need it to be, is finally starting to tick up in the right direction. So the trajectory at least is positive. That doesn't mean that things are as they should be. And it probably means that we need to be accelerating the reforms and things like our port, and allow them to devolve. I guess my concluding remark is this. I think we've come there. A lot of the people that are sitting here, I know Mr. Beasley is in Parliament for the first time. I'm in Parliament for the first time. We've come here to try and help. And I think if we can go develop a common understanding and insist that we assume the best from other people, I think we get to a place where we can start disagreeing on the principle, but not on the language and the semantics and nonsense. And I think if we get that right, we might be the leaders that's needed now, Mr. Ghana. We might be the new guys coming in willing to find a way to understand each other. But I think it has to start with being truthful. So that's my encouragement. Let's be rigorous, let's be truthful, and let's assume the best of each other.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, I wish there were some ladies, and I hope we'll change that here when we come to Cape Town next time. But thank you all for your... I want to agree with you wholeheartedly. I think everyone here wants to do good. Everyone here says, you've all spoken so beautifully and persuasively about the real people that our policies, our actions have to impact. And those are the poorest of the poor. And so I would say that's where, looking at this budget and the state of the nation and all these other big feature items that we participate in, that's the key thing. What are we making people's lives better tomorrow and the day after and the day after? So thank you all for putting in your bit of what people call country duty. I really appreciate it. We really appreciate it. And I hope you'll accommodate us again when we come to Cape Town, which will be soon. Thank you.